Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
Somehow, amazingly, we have 2 years in the books of Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, and it is thrilling to know that we're getting close to 3 million downloads in 2 years as we begin our third year of KKHI. We get asked a lot of questions about, are you going to go live? Are you going to have a new YouTube channel? Are you going to do video? Are you going to expand? Are you going to have a staff? And I've repeatedly responded to emails and folks that have asked these questions that we're just really comfortable doing what we're doing. We had a lot of employees for a lot of years, a lot of different things going on in our life. And right now, the way we're doing this is working. It is making an impact in our community. I truly believe that. The power of the listeners and what you do and the way you spread the word and the way we've all kind of come out and embraced our conservatism and unafraid, fearless, if you will, to discuss who and what we are and what matters to us in our community, in our states, in our country, is empowering. We love what we're doing, so we're not really going to expand the podcast and do things differently, but we have a very special announcement to make as we begin year three of Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, and that is the debut of a new website. It's very simple. It's a simple concept. We started with, how can we enhance the value for the sponsors of the podcast who make this possible? Every day we do the podcast, and it couldn't be done if we didn't have sponsors. And if you didn't support the sponsors, we certainly couldn't do this. We'd be doing something else. So it all really is driven around that, and creating value for the sponsors is something that we decided, let's get a website. Let's make something very simple. We get a lot of emails of people asking, hey, what's the name of that car dealership? Hey, what's the name of your roofer? What's the number? Who's the contact? So we started with a simple concept of, let's build a website where all the sponsors are in one place. So if you don't hear them on the podcast, you can go right to the site and see who they are, what they're about, how much we have in common, and why we should do business with one another. So we took that and we started thinking, well, we could do something even better than that. What if we created something like Angie's List? Or if you're old enough to remember, the Yellow Pages. What if we started a directory of conservative businesses, like-minded people, available to all the listeners of KKHI, knowing that you can do business with people like us? And wouldn't you rather spend your money there? And don't you trust businesses like that more than some random business that you really don't know about? Simple concept. So we've created the KKList.com. It's very simple. You can go to the website right now. TheKKList.com. TheKKList.com. You will see at the top of the website all of the podcast sponsors. They're category exclusive. There won't be another roofer on there. There won't be another car dealer. There won't be another window company like Window World. There won't be another jeweler like Joslin's. They're all category exclusive. But below that, you'll see different types of businesses that are professional services, home services, home and garden, things of that nature, products. And those people will just get listed. If you have a conservative business and you want to be listed on the list, again, you cannot compete with the podcast sponsors, right? So if you're a roofing company, I'm sorry, we won't take you. But any other category, and there's many categories of businesses that could be listed here, we'll put you on the list if you click the button that says join the list. Contact us for a small fee each month. We'll put you on the list and you stay there. We create a community of people that we know listen to the podcast, love sports and politics, love America, and you know who you're doing business with. It's the KKList.com. It's a very simple concept. You can go check it out right now. After 2 years, we've decided it's taken us forever to do this. I don't know why, but it creates good value for the sponsors. They're all listed right there, the podcast sponsors. But it's a way to involve listeners, and we can only thank you for listening to the podcast. 2 years in, the amazing growth of the podcast is shocking to me. It's mostly shocking to Jessica We thank the listeners. We thank the sponsors. We thank the guests that come on KKHI. We thank Stan Weber and Danny Klingscale and Ryan Lefevre for being contributors to this podcast. I'm going to get emotional because I cannot believe this has been so successful. I can't believe people get up every day and listen to me talk about whatever it is that I'm talking about. But it's real. It's touching. I can't believe it. I had no idea when we left radio that, hey, they're going to allow me to do this podcast and nothing else. I can't do TV, can't do radio, can't do these other things. But they'll allow me to do this podcast. Okay, it's a lark. Let's do it. I thought we had a good game plan. I think we mostly put the podcast up at a time of day that it works for people. It becomes part of a routine. I don't even know where to start saying thank you. Not just for listening, but sharing the podcast with other people. People that you know are like-minded, that may enjoy it. Hey, give this a listen. Here's how to listen to a podcast, because we're still fighting that battle. Less than half of the people in America have ever listened to a podcast. That's unbelievable. Like 99.9% of people have listened to radio. Less than half of America has listened to a podcast. So we're still battling that. Here's how you do it. It's appointment, broadcasting, whatever. You're in your car, you're driving to work, you're on a sales call, whatever it may be, you're on a walk, you're on a treadmill. My goodness. Thank you for hitting the play button. Thank you. And hopefully you'll find the KK list to be of value to you, a resource, if you will. I know a lot of us who own homes or just live our lives that want to shop or have something fixed or do something would love to know somebody in the business, right? Like my father-in-law's business is the guy next door. He's on the list. He does all kinds of things. He's the guy next door. I had a neighbor named Todd Stanley for many, many years, and the guy could fix anything. I had something break at my house and I'd call him. Hey, he's the guy next door. Hey, buddy, I got this broken door. Can you put it back on the hinge for me? And he'd come do it. So my father-in-law, Dave, who is the sweetest, nicest man you'll ever meet, does all that. He's a builder. He is a handyman. He's a carpenter. He's an electrician. He's a plumber. You name it, he does it. He's the guy next door. He's on the list. You want to call somebody to fix something at your house? He's the guy. He's on the kklist.com. The guy next door. So this list hopefully will be something that you can use and it will be easy for you. That you can just say, oh, I know where to look. I'll look there. Hopefully we get somebody in every category. If you want to join the list, again, go to the kklist.com, click on join the list, or go there and visit and see the podcast sponsors and see the list members, which is a separate deal. They really won't get mentioned on the podcast. It's just the list. We'll talk about the KK list and how you can go there and find somebody to do business with when you need it most, somebody to do business with that you can trust, that you can know when they come to your home or when you buy something from them, you have something in common with them. Forget the podcast. Forget that you both listen to KKHI. You know the way they run their business, the way they live their life, what's important to them, and now you get to do business with them. So we're creating this list, and we would love people to join, and it really is for anyone that is in any kind of business, really. And there's so many categories of things that people do that you maybe wouldn't have an advertising budget and want to sponsor the podcast, and maybe that wouldn't be for you, but maybe you're a realtor, and this is a way to join the list, and you can become the realtor in your part of town or your area or Kansas or Missouri or even out of town. Maybe you live in Arizona and you want to be a realtor there and a few people from Kansas City want to buy second homes. Maybe this works for you. It can be anyone can join the list. The only way you know about the list is if you listen to this podcast. which by definition means we're all in this together. I can't thank you enough. I cannot believe I'm starting year three of my third act. I worked in TV, I worked in radio, and now I'm a podcaster. It is beyond description how much I want to thank everybody for hitting the play button and listening and enjoying what we do. And a very small way to give back is the KK list. Let's learn to do business with each other. Let's strengthen who and what we are. It is a family. It's a big family, but it's a family. We're in this together. It's unbelievable because all the years I was doing sports, people would come up and go, you hate my team. And now everywhere I go, they're like, oh my God, I love the podcast, dude. Yes. And most times it's somebody with a USA shirt on or, you know, something. You just know they're conservative, right? Or they're driving a big truck, a Chevy Silverado with a flag in the window. I love it. I just love it. And I can't thank you enough for saying hello, listening to the podcast, supporting the sponsors, and all of the things we've done. Jessica and Spencer, you get a special nod. Couldn't run this thing without Jess. Spencer doing the weekends and filling in the days that I'm gone is incredible. Stan Weber for being on. Danny Klinkskill for doing Between the Lines 2.0 for the patrons. Ryan LaFever, who's been a great contributor, will join us in a couple of moments. Wrapping up the Royals season. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And if you want to do business with good conservatives, just go to thekklist.com. If you want to join the list, click the link that says join the list. It's a very short little form. It's an email. Go straight to Jessica. She's going to answer all the inquiries and figure out the list. But please support these sponsors. It means everything to us that you want to do business with other conservatives. It's a simple concept. I think it will catch on. It's either the smartest thing we've ever done or the dumbest thing we've ever done. I don't know. I'm being very honest about it. But it seems like a very simple concept. And when I meet you and I hear from all of you, it seems like something you'd like and something you'd want. TheKKList.com. TheKKList.com. There's even entertainment there. Like, I've linked you to the Chris DeGaulle podcast, Pete Mundo show, all kinds of different conservative things. There's a few on there, but this list can grow. We have room for hundreds on the site if everybody wants to jump in. Let's do it. TheKKList.com. And thank you from the bottom of my heart for 2 years of support, for believing in what we're doing, for making a difference. We're close to the midterms. Find a person to vote. Find a person that you don't know if they'll vote, but you kind of know what they're about, and you know they're conservative. Tell them about our candidates and get them to vote. Just find one person. Just find one that isn't going to vote, and we can make a massive, massive difference. And don't forget to visit thekklist.com. Thank you so much for 2 great years. Let's start year three with Ryan LaFever after a crazy, wild Sunday home finale for the Kansas City Royals, where they scored 11 runs in the sixth inning. Largest comeback since my 14th birthday, 1979. It was the largest comeback since 1979. The Royals scoring 11 runs in the sixth inning. Ryan LaFever had a great call. He just said, unbelievable. And it was. It was fun. Ryan LaFever joins us on KKHI. Hit it.
The KK Has Issues conversation is presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. Shop, click, drive at robertsrobinson.com.
Well, if you're going to finish off the home schedule, you might as well finish it off like the Royals did on Sunday. What a crazy game. 11 runs in the sixth inning. And outside of the postseason, I know Ryan LaFever's had some great calls with the Kansas City Royals. What is better than unbelievable? And it truly was. Hello, Rhino. How are you?
Hey, Kevin. How are you? That was something. And it's probably the only time I can think of in my career that I hit the exclamation point before the play was even over with.
You were in the game. You were feeling it.
It was, I'm not going to say I could predict that they were going to score 11 runs, but two happenings before that, Seattle scored 8. And those innings just have a feel when there's a lot of walks and three bases, hit batters, whatever. There's just this momentum build. And I think you can just feel this is going to be a really big inning here. And then that inning, when the Royals scored 11, just had that same feel. I didn't know if it'd be 11, but, you know, it was like, hey, if so-and-so gets to the plate, it was also the Sonic slam inning, too. So that was exciting because we had so many plate appearances with the bases loaded. But it, I remember thinking, okay, if this guy gets to the plate, this could be a two-run game. If this guy gets to the plate, this could be a one-run game and so on and so forth. So I think the feeling was, wow, they're going to get back into this game. But to take the lead in that inning, I mean, it was unbelievable.
You know, they hit some hard balls. You can't lie. I mean, they hit some hard shots. But for an inning like that, it takes a lot. And over a course of 162 games, you watch a lot of hard-hit balls that are outs. Man, there was a sun fly that fell in. There was a ground ball to third that just ate the guy up. There was a blooper into short left. There were some really funky things happening in that inning, too. And I guess if you're going to score 11, it takes something funky, doesn't it?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because on the flight to Detroit, we were going over that game. We hadn't seen each other because we had Monday off, so a lot of us were sitting down on the plane and going over that game on Sunday. And one thing that kept coming up was, can you remember a game where the sun was that much of a factor at Kauffman Stadium? I mean, Kauffman Stadium is positioned exactly the way you want a ballpark to be positioned, where the sun is a factor, but it's a factor for part of the game, but not all of the game. But that sun seemed to move wherever the Royals needed it to move. I mean, it was a sun field in left. Then it was a sun field in center. You know? And if we had gone into extra innings, we probably would have won it because of a sun ball in right. But the sun can be a factor at Kauffman Stadium, but I don't even remember one game, and I'm sure, you know, with the limited time that I've been here, I'm sure there's been others. But that, I don't remember a game where the sun affected so many plays in one game.
Well, it's lower and it's brighter in September than regular summer, and there's no haze in the sky. It's just harder, I think. You know, you know.
And it was windy. It was windy, and that affects the player's eyes. You know, when the wind is drying up your tears, and that will cause the player just naturally to squint, and that makes the sun seem even brighter, too.
Well, we'll take it. That's all I know is we'll take it, and that was wild, fun entertainment, and we could spend probably an hour recapping the season about what went wrong or what went right and all of what happened. But I think most Royals fans today, as they listen to this podcast, are looking forward. We had the big news that Dayton Moore is out after 16 years with the Royals, a World Series championship in 2015, back-to-back World Series appearances. And, you know, I really like Dayton. I respect the man. I think he's a tremendous person. I texted him after this happened, and I said, you did the impossible. Man, you came to Kansas City in a small market and you won a World Series. Don't keep your head up, okay? I know that he's not happy today. He's probably in shock that this is happening to him. But I know he's a strong man, a great person. And in the last 30 years, there's only one small market team that's won a World Series, and it's the Royals. And that's a heck of a thing to put on your resume. I will miss Dayton Moore, but it does feel like maybe it's time to do something different.
Yeah, and the second part is harder for me just because I've gotten to know him so well since he's been here. And I'll say he and I did not get off to the greatest start, and mostly because of my fault. But when he arrived, I mean, we were so bad for so long that I think we began to accept it. And one of the ways that we dealt with it on the air was with humor. And I came up in a family that relieved tension with humor and making fun of each other in a loving way, but at the same time, you know, there's always a little bit of truth behind a joke or a funny insult or whatever. And he didn't like it. And he called us out on it. And we really weren't monitored that way when Allard Baird was general manager. Allard was, you know, very focused, I think, on just making the team respectable. I mean, the thought of the Royals being a winning team, a playoff team, and a championship team was way down the road. I mean, that was beyond imagination. I think the focus then was just, you know, how can we put a 500 team on the field and play some meaningful games? And so when Dayton had his press conference, he talked about winning a championship and talked about all of our successes tied together, which keeps coming up over and over again. I was skeptical. I liked him right away, and I could tell that he had great leadership qualities, and he was, at the time, the number one general manager candidate in the entire industry. So it was exciting for him to come. But, let's see how this plays out. What does all of our success tied together mean? I mean, are we really going to win a championship? And more than make the team better, he had to change the culture and he had to change the expectations. And so if we're on the air and we're making fun of bad plays or teasing ourselves for bad baseball, I mean, that's not helping him out to change the culture. That's not helping the fans change their perception of the organization. And so it took me a few years to really understand what that meant. But, the light bulb went on for me when I began to see how we were drafting and how we were getting certain coaches and managers in the system. And then it just turned into be a great relationship. And I've always said I've learned more about leadership from Dayton than I have baseball. And I've learned plenty of baseball from him. And my favorite day of the week was Sunday, to just sit with him and talk with him off the air and then do that long interview that we would play on Sundays. And I could ask him anything. And he wanted me to ask him anything. He wanted me to ask the difficult questions. I mean, he would sit down often and say, what do we need to talk about? Because he felt that, if I had some sort of a pulse as to what the fans were wondering about, that he wanted to address it. He wanted to address it head on. And he never said, we're going to talk about this. Or if he said, I don't want to talk about that, it usually was, I can't talk about that. Meaning the league had stepped in and told general managers, hey, stay away from this topic right now until further down the road. So, I mean, I learned so many life lessons from him. You and I could just do a show on everything I learned just by observing him. I think my favorite line that he ever said that meant the most to me was, you can't lead other people until you lead yourself first. And you can come in and you can boss people around. You can be a dictator. You can threaten people's jobs. You can lead with fear. But after a while, it's just not going to work. And the people are going to become emotionally detached and you can't lead them anymore. But if a leader comes in and you can tell that he's living out all the things that he's preaching, then it's easier to get behind something like that. And there's a human side to him that is just so fascinating, in that with all of the things he's achieved, he was constantly questioning himself. I mean, you try to praise Dayton Moore, you better sit down and be ready for him to question all the things that he did wrong. He was just a great example for me. I mean, trying to be a professional at what I was doing, represent the team, being a husband and a father and a friend at the same time, watching him constantly question himself and trying to grow, even though, he had this enormous achievement as helping us win a World Series. I'll never forget him, and I'm grateful that he'll be a friend for life.
Well, he's an iconic figure in Kansas City sports, there's no doubt about it, and a Royals Hall of Famer, and the whatever wounds there are new and open at this point, but someday will be healed. And I know his place in Kansas City sports history. I'm not sure. He probably does. I don't know him well enough to know if he's thinking about that or not. I don't know where he goes from here, whether he wants to be a humanitarian, whether he wants to stay in baseball, whether he wants to be a GM again. Do you have any insight along those lines as to what may happen next? And were you surprised that it really went down the way it did? It seems like that would have been a move they could have waited 3 weeks and done at the end of the year. But I think John Sherman was trying to make a statement maybe to the fans in some way. Were you surprised at the way it all went down?
I was. And as fate would have it, right after the press conference, I ran into Mr. Sherman. And he asked me how I was doing because he knows how close we are. And I just said, I've never owned a Major League Baseball team before, so I don't understand everything, but it's not my job to understand everything. And I'll just choose to go that route. But I know that he cares about Kansas City, he cares about the Royals, and he wants to have his championship mark on this team as well. mean, as for Dayton, I mean, that's just a constant conversation amongst us who are friends of his. You know, what do you think he's going to do? I think he'd be a great athletic director at a Division I university, especially one that needs a new stadium or really needs to improve their image in their city and in their state. And I don't know if he would be able to embrace all the sports, but that was just something that comes to mind. I mean, I think he is truly a baseball person at heart. He would miss the day-to-day of watching a team grow and the transactions. So that may not be a great fit. But I when you said the humanitarian thing, that really struck a nerve with me, because I can remember before the Royals were even a winning team, and we were still kind of muddling along trying to put this thing together, and we were going through a particularly frustrating time, and I was talking to Dayton and asked him how he was doing, and he said, I'll never forget it, he said, you know what I want to do? I want to win here. And he meant championship. I want to win here, pass this along to somebody else, and I'm just going to go be a missionary or a college coach.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, whatever, you know. Well, then we win. And we were together a few years after that. We were in Guatemala together with our church, and we just happened to be chatting off to the side. And I had a question I've been wanting to ask him, and I finally said, you know, here we are in a missions trip, and you told me years ago that all you wanted to do was win and then pass this on to somebody else, but you're still here. What changed your mind? And he told me, I never had any idea how many other doors that this position would open up by winning a championship. I mean, he goes out and helps create the Urban Youth Academy in Kansas City. After the summer of 2020 and the George Floyd riots, he initiates Unite KC, where he brings a lot of leaders of different backgrounds together in Kansas City and brings them together to, you know, what can we do to unite our city and not just stump into a microphone and say we must be more united, but I mean to do the opposite, not doing any stumping at all, but let's get people together and figure out what we can do. And my wife Sarah and I got involved at the Urban Youth Academy, and the motto became, what's one thing that everyone can do? If everyone in the community would just do one thing, what would it be? And so, I mean, just things like that. I mean, visiting men in prisons and getting to the root of how did you become a little boy with dreams of being whatever, something productive in society? I mean, how did you end up here? And just being compassionate and sharing his story. And, you know, one of his great lines he would say to them was, the only difference between you and me is that you got caught and I didn't get caught. And I mean, that resonates, I think, with a lot of people. And then he would take this information and he would share it with his young players in the minor leagues. Because a lot of times, you know, people go from good to bad in a very slow fade. It doesn't happen overnight, but it's a series of choices that over time build and then, you know, become one event that's life-changing. I mean, he really, really cared about people just as much, if not more, than he did caring about wins or losses. So, I mean, the canvas is blank for him. It is empty. I mean, he can color it any way he wants right now and do essentially anything he wants to do.
All right, so J.J. Piccolo was the first person he hired when he got to Kansas City, and now J.J. Piccolo takes over the role, and this seems permanent. We agree with that. This is a permanent move. They're going forward. It's his team. He gets to do what he wants with the manager, with his staff, whatever. And I'm a simpleton, Ryan. I'm a simple guy, but if you could point to one thing that went wrong consistently under Dayton Moore, was the inability to draft and develop pitching. Royals are 27th in starting pitching again this year. And it's a criticism, but it's a criticism of a general manager that won a World Series. So you got to take it a little bit with a grain of salt. And again, I'm a simpleton. If I'm J.J. Piccolo and I'm in charge now, I think I'm looking at the organization going, who stays that can help me draft and develop pitching and who doesn't know how to do this? And they're gone. And I'm going to go to Mr. Sherman and say, I'll go to Cleveland or some of these other cities and hire some guys off their staff, pay them a little bit more money, elevate them, people with proven records of drafting and developing pitching. Is that too simple? Am I oversimplifying the job? Because the job for the Royals right now really is pitching, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the ironic part of all this is that while the Royals built a championship through a bullpen and through speed and defense, Dayton always maintained that starting pitching was the most important thing to have. And I mean, we drafted and drafted and drafted starting pitching. So, and he would be the first to admit that that's an area where we needed to be better. And I'm a simpleton like you are too. I mean, I understand how much data plays a role in evaluating pitchers before you even draft them and what path to take them in development. But, you know, you look at certain pitchers that we have that are having a tough time right now, and they're talking about vertical angle and spin rate and all this stuff. And I see Salvi with his glove down and away, and the pitch is up and in, and it ends up in the fountain. And so I'm thinking, well, if he had hit his spot, maybe that wouldn't have been a home run right here. I mean, what kind of data do you need for a pitcher to just hit the glove? So, but I do understand that there's a lot more that goes into it, and the game has changed as far as what works at this level and how do you get a pitcher to that level. Starters don't go 6, 7, 8 innings anymore. I mean, it's more of a max effort for 4 or 5, maybe 6 innings, and then you turn it over to the bullpen. Okay, well, how do you condition a guy like that now as opposed to 10 years ago? How do you identify somebody like that now? The Astros were a great model a few years ago. I mean, they were the ones that really got behind the spin rate, and you had a lot of pitchers who were sinker slider, but their spin rate suggested that they should be four-seam fastball curveball. So they started taking guys and converting them, taking the data and saying, you know, you really should be throwing these pitches. They'll come more naturally for you. And so that's where the data plays in. I mean, are we miscasting certain guys in certain roles? So that's obviously an area where the Royals need to evolve. And, you know, we just don't have the luxury of missing like some larger market teams in the draft. I mean, if we have a bad year, that's not good for anybody. But the payoff is that you get a high draft pick and you hope it's an impact player that's going to help the team for years to come. I mean, we're not the Dodgers who have a $250 million television deal. And if their first round pick doesn't pan out, well, that's okay. We'll trade for some other team's first round pick and fix our hole that way. So on one hand, I don't think you're a simpleton. I think the basics are still there, as you're saying. There's just more data that gets you and me to that eventual simpleton destination, if that makes sense.
Okay. All right, so we know, well, I know J.J. Piccolo a little bit, okay? But you know him very well, I assume. I'm curious what it is, because we've watched him. We've known he's in the organization. He got interviews with other organizations to maybe leave but stayed, got elevated to general manager. What is it about J.J. Piccolo that John Sherman sees that made him say, you know what, this guy should be in charge of all of it and Dayton shouldn't be here? What is it about J.J. Piccolo that he sees that he believes this is the right way forward?
Well, I think I've heard mixed reaction from Dayton being fired. Most people around the industry will agree that he was a great leader and still had leadership qualities to share with the Royals and get us back to a championship again. And we're disappointed in the timing and how it was done or whatever. And at some point, the conversation usually gets to, you know, that's a long time to be a general manager and how difficult that job is day in and day out. As stressful as it is, you know, you can't just worry about tonight's game. You got to worry about tomorrow's game, next week's game, next month's game, and continue to answer questions about yesterday's game and last week's game and last month's game. And there's so much going on. That's one thing I've learned in just my off-the-record conversations with Dayton over the years before we started our on-the-record interviews. It's just everything that he had to manage every single day. So I think the feeling was one of the main feelings was within the organization is that maybe not the term that just keeps coming up, and it's where we are right now. It's the expression we use when there's a change. It's time for a new voice. But I think maybe the feeling was it was time for a fresh voice, in that this job just takes a toll after a while. And JJ has been groomed by Dayton, by the way, to take over this job eventually. And there was a transition that began a year ago, and Dayton became president and JJ became general manager. And I think while Mr. Sherman has been here, he and Brooke Sherman have been just above average, above standard in coming into this situation with humility and not, you know, I own the team and I have all the answers. And Denny Matthews has a great line about the reverse. Denny will say, this guy has all the answers and none of the questions. And Mr. Sherman and Brooke Sherman are the opposite. I mean, they have answers. I mean, they wouldn't have taken this on had they not spent that time in Cleveland and had an idea that they could make this work. But they have a lot of questions. They ask a lot of questions. And I think over the course of asking Dayton questions and JJ questions, I'm sure Mr. Sherman thought, you know, this guy would be someone we would interview. If Dayton had retired or resigned or taken another job and they're going from scratch, who we can interview? I think Dayton would, or JJ would have been at the top of the list as far as somebody that they would interview. He's already in-house. They have a relationship. He knows the organization. I mean, we're in Detroit right now, Kevin, and the Tigers did the same thing a couple of months ago, and then they hired a young general manager from the Giants to come over and take over. I mean, you're bringing in a completely different culture. This guy's going to bring in his people. You're going to have a lot of people out of jobs. And, I mean, that's hard. That's really hard on an organization. And I think Mr. Sherman understands that while we're not winning right now, there's a certain culture that we have. And JJ knows the organization. He knows the culture. He knows Mr. Sherman. Mr. Sherman knows him. And he's earned this.
I think one of the interesting things in the next few weeks will be, what does JJ Piccolo do with his manager, Mike Matheny? And he didn't state unequivocally, hey, he's my guy. This is my guy. He didn't say that. I think there's a, you know, it's kind of an open book at this point, I guess, what's going to happen going forward with everybody on the staff and whatever JJ wants to do. Any thoughts about Mike Matheny as the Royals manager? To me, if they just made this statement about me, I am not ready to make this move yet. Okay. I'm staying with my manager. I know that sounds to a lot of people listening, maybe a little bit lame, but I'm going to stick with him and evaluate things going forward and try to get some better players in here, better pitchers in here, and see if he is or is not the right guy. Now, I don't know the inner workings. I don't know the machinations of what's going on, you know, in the clubhouse or with the players or whatever, but I think it might be a little dramatic if he pulls that trigger in a couple of weeks. What do you think is going to happen with Mike Matheny?
Yeah, I don't know, and I don't want to know, to be honest. I mean, I don't want to put anyone in a bad position and ask them, hey, you know, I don't want to ask Mike, you know, do you want to come back, or ask JJ, do you want, you know, is Mike going to be here next year? I think too much was made out of that. I think all of this happened so quickly, and I don't think Mike and JJ have had a chance to sit down and just look at what JJ wants to do with the organization, what stamp he wants to put on the organization, and potential changes to major league staff, minor league staff, whatever. I mean, there clearly is going to be some more change beyond this one. But for JJ to sit there and say, you know, he's my manager, you know, Mike's been around a long time as a player and a manager. They need to sit down and they need to talk and let the dust settle and go from there. So I don't feel like that was a preview of a lack of stamp of approval or anything like that. I mean, that's just, JJ's been around long enough to say, you know, that this is a conversation that the two of us are going to have together, and I'm going to give him my input, and Mike's earned the right to give his input, and then they figure out where they're going to go from there. But I don't think that was a preview of that there's going to be a change of manager. And even if there is, I don't think that JJ was hinting at that in the press conference.
Okay, so where do you assess where they are? I mean, we can look at these position players, and there's a lot to like here with many of these young players. I don't think that's going to be an issue for the Royals. I mean, to me, it's just, does the pitching get better? Or does it not get better? You know, it's not like they're the 27 Yankees up and down the lineup, but I see the players. I like them. There's a lot to like here with some of the young players. Bobby Witt Jr. obviously is the headliner of this group, but I think there's plenty there. If the pitching came along, how close are they? Do you see some improvement or development with the young pitching, or is it going to have to be retooled and take several years through the draft to really bring it along?
This is a less than ideal situation. It's exciting. It's exciting to look at a team that has all of their top pitching prospects and all their top positional prospects in the major leagues at the same time. And they're all about the same age. I mean, it's unprecedented. However, ideally on the pitching side, the Royals would like to have the reverse of what they have right now in the starting rotation. Right now you have four young starters and one veteran, Zach Greinke. Ideally, you want to have four veterans and you bring up one starter at a time, so he doesn't feel the weight of the world every time he takes the mound. And the most ideal situation is you have four veteran starters, one rookie, and you're on a winning team, so that that player really sees the veterans take the load and they pitch in the fourth or fifth spot in the rotation, and they just go out and they just try and execute as best they can. And if it doesn't work out, well, someone else is going to pick them up. So as exciting as it is to see the future out there every single night on the mound, I mean, this is not ideal. You don't want to have rookies outside of Brady Singer. I think Brady Singer has kind of come into his own, and he's realized very quickly what it takes to be a good big league starter. He's starting to do that every time out. But the other guys, every time they take them out, and this goes into, you know, Max Castillo, who pitched that game on Sunday and hasn't been a regular part of the rotation, but he's a young guy. They take them out, and it's life or death in their minds. In reality, it's not. But many of them are pitching right now like it's life or death, like they're one start away from going to the minor leagues. And I don't care if you're a major league pitcher, if you're a broadcaster, if you're a radio talk show host, you work at a bank, or you're a kindergarten teacher. I mean, that's no way to go to work every day thinking that today is life or death for me. No one's going to perform. I mean, at times we can come through with that kind of a stress, but over time it just doesn't work. So we were playing Cleveland a couple of homestands ago, and I was talking to Tom Hamilton, and I was asking him about the mid-90s, early to mid-90s, when Cleveland moved into their new stadium and they had all these young players at the same time, and they signed them to some contracts just to give them some security. And they took off, and they just dominated the Central Division for a long time. And I asked him, you know, what was that like? And he said, well, the first thing they did is they signed Eddie Murray, they signed Oral Hershiser, and they signed Dennis Martinez. They brought some veterans in that were still contributing. They weren't at their best, but they were still contributing. And they taught these young guys how to play, and they taught them how to win. So maybe that's the next step, that the majority of the pieces are in place, but what's missing right now maybe is a James Shields and an Edinson Volquez, or a Kendrys Morales or a Raul Labañez, or somebody like that. Somebody that comes in and has won somewhere else, has had a good career, and they're willing to come in and contribute and teach at the same time. That's yeah. Just the only model that I can go by right now, Kevin. And it also applies to, you know, to 14 and 15. I mean, those are names right there that help the Royals, that young, talented team, get over the top.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting few weeks and an unbelievable offseason, I feel like, for the Royals. There'll be certainly a lot of changes. One thing that will not change is Ryan Lefever as the voice and the face of the Royals. We know that. And the finish line is near. One final road trip here, buddy, and then it's, I know for you, a lot of family time, and I'm sure you'll be doing a lot of great work in the community and heck, maybe even around the world in your offseason. We're going to check back in with you in the postseason around the World Series, and we'll talk a little postseason baseball and see what's at the very top, but it's been a lot of fun, and I know, you know, it's bittersweet. You'd love to be calling the playoffs. You'd love to have 100 wins under your belt and get ready for the postseason here. But I also know it's a grind for broadcasters, too. And the finish line is near, Ryan. That's a good thing for your family. They'll have you back home.
It is. And unfortunately, it ends with a 9-game road trip. So I've had to do a lot of soothing the days leading up to this, okay, I'm going on the road. It's going to be a long trip, but when I come back, I'll be done. I'll be done. So I'm already getting the calls. Daddy, how many days are left? So, yeah, the countdown is on. But, you know, Kevin, you and I have known each other a long time and have become friends. And you suggested this at the beginning of the baseball season, and I was really looking forward to it, just having a chance to have some long format conversations, probably a lot of rambling by me. You've been a really good brain dump for me during the baseball season that I can't fit into maybe an inning or a broadcast, but it's been really enjoyable, even more enjoyable than I thought it was going to be, to spend the summer checking in with you every now and then and kicking around some ideas and hearing your thoughts on certain things. And that's the part for me that's evolved over time as a broadcaster. I think as a young broadcaster, I just wanted everyone to think that I knew what I was talking about, and I felt like I had to have an opinion on everything and I had to be right on everything. But marriage and children will humble a man, and making enough mistakes on the air will humble a man. And so it's I enjoy actually being told that I'm wrong, or maybe my opinion is old or whatever, and learning new things. And so kicking some topics around with you all spring and summer has been a lot of fun.
I just enjoyed hearing you say brain dump, because when you said brain dump, all I could think of was my brain is a dump. That's perfect. You've nailed it. You've come on. You've identified the obvious about this podcast is Kevin's brain is a dump. That's pretty much it. The second you said it, I thought of myself. That's exactly what I thought is, yep, Ryan has all this knowledge and expertise on the Royals and Major League Baseball. And I thought, yep, my brain is a dump. That's just about right.
You're a place, you're a safe place to come and brain dump, Kevin. That's the best compliment I can give you.
Oh, I hope Jessica doesn't listen this far into the podcast, because she will just have a ball with the last minute here. I'm telling you, she will never, I'll never hear the end of it from her if she hears this part.
Oh, man.
You're the best, buddy. I can't thank you enough. And we'll check back in a few weeks and maybe talk a little postseason baseball and see who's still standing. It gets wild in the postseason, but we'll have some fun down the road. And we really appreciate it, man. Thank you. I know it's been a hard time.
I would love it.
Yeah, I know it's on the personal side, it's been hard for you too, because you're close to Dayton, and there's so many people in the organization that way. I know this is not an easy thing to talk about in an easy time, but we wish you and everyone on the broadcast team and the people that you work with and communications with the Royals the very best. It's a hard thing to lose a friend and see them out the door, and we know it's been a tough time for you and so many others.
Well, and we're still in very good hands. That's the good news.
Well said. Thank you, Rhino. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.